Okay, good morning. Let's see. So we were in the right at the end of looking at principal values and improper integrals, so extending the concept of integration to some functions that were not Riemann integrable. Okay, and so let me just finish up this example that I had brought up last time, and it brings up a couple of points. So, right, so we're looking at, just to remind you, the principal value of this integral, e to the t over t, from minus infinity to 1. Okay, and it's improper because we have this minus infinity here, right? So we have an improper part. And it's needs a principal value because we have a singularity at zero, right? If I plug in zero, it's not defined. So that's where we're going to use this principal value. And the definition again is that the for the improper part, the definition of the improper integral is just the limit as n gets larger of these perfectly good Riemann integrable functions. So that's a standard Riemann integral in there. And then we take a limit. Similarly, over here, each of these, as long as we stay away from zero, each of these is a perfectly good Riemann integral. And then we're going to take the limit of their sum. Okay, so that's the notion of the principal value and the improper integrals. Okay, so the goal is to show that this integral exists. Principal value of this integral, just copying what I have on the right hand board there, from minus infinity to 1 of e to the t over t dt exists. Okay, and we'll split it into these two parts. So let's start with this first one here. So the first part. Okay, so I want this integral from minus infinity to minus 1 e to the t over t dt. Of course, just copying what we have over there, limit as n goes to infinity of the integral from minus n to minus 1 e to the t over t dt. Okay. Now, we're not trying to find this integral. It's not one that we can write a formula for. So instead, all we're trying to do is show that it exists. Okay. And so the goal next is to find a way to see that this exists. And we'll try to do it by showing that this is less than something, okay? And then getting our limit. So that the limit exists. So let's see. So how could I bound this by something that I can integrate and whose integral is going to be going to something that converges? Okay, so let's see. So in this domain, this is always at least negative 1. So let me just note that if we have t is less than negative 1, then at least an absolute value e to the t over t is less than or equal to I guess less than equal to less than equal to e to the t. So I get a bound. Okay, so I can just make use of that. And so then this is a limit n goes to minus infinity to sorry, n goes to infinity minus n to minus 1. And this is just bounded by e to the t dt. And that's an integral I do know how to do, so that I can integrate. So then this is a limit n goes to infinity. And when I integrate, I get 1 over e minus 1 over e to the n. And that limit is just 1 over e, which exists. So we get the original one exists. Okay. All right, and so then what about this second part here? So this one is a little bit more of a concern. If I compute this integral from zero to minus infinity and take epsilon going, I'm sorry, to epsilon and take that epsilon going to zero, this is going to diverge and this is going to diverge. And so what we're hoping for is that they'll cancel. And remember, if I still have it here, it barely fits here. Previously, we noticed that this integral, while it diverges, the principal value is just zero because it just cancels exactly, right? Even though each one of these is going to infinity, if you keep it even, they cancel exactly, okay? And so you get exactly zero. All right, and so that's the trick we're going to use. So for the second part, and this was improper. And for the second part, we're going to get that principal value. Okay, and so that one's going to be our integral from minus one to one. And so the trick is to consider subtracting off the singularity. Okay, and let me just do it in a couple ways. So we'll take a f tilde of t to be our function that we care about, so e to the t over t, but then we're going to subtract off the singular bit, which is going to be our 1 over t. Okay, and I'm going to try to make this a continuous function by plugging in some value here, and so this will be if t is not 0, and this is if t is equal to 0. Okay, so this kind of came out of nowhere, right? I just produced this function. So how would I check that this is, in fact, a continuous function?
The issue would only just be checking for when t is equal to zero or in that area, right? So you would do the limit and see if it's equal to f of zero.
That's exactly right. Exactly. You say we would just compute the limit as a t approaches zero and see whether that is in fact equal to one like we want. So we'll compute the limit as a t approaches zero of the function evaluated away from zero. So that's just e to t over t minus one over t. And let's see, putting over common denominator. So limit t goes to zero of e to the t minus one. And how would I compute that limit?
Equals to one.
Mm-hmm. It does equal one, exactly. And as someone said in the chat box, the trick that I'm going to use is L'Hopital rule thing. Thanks. So this will be the limit as t goes to zero, and say it works naturally one, and we take the derivative of the top, which is in the t, and the derivative of the bottom, which is one, and so that then is equal to one. So we get the which is what we wanted. So this is continuous, all right? So that's going to be our trick. We subtract off something whose principal value is zero, and it makes it into something that's continuous and therefore integrable. That's pretty. Let me just, as an aside, note how we might have guessed that that how to fix that singularity. So why is 1 over t the right thing to subtract? So one answer is that it worked. We got something continuous. But here's another answer, if you were trying to guess what that is. I can also, the other fact about e to the t is that it has a really nice power series expansion, right? So what's the, everyone remember the power series for e to the t?
Could that be t to the nth over n factorial?
Mm-hmm, exactly so. So t to the n over n factorial, n runs from 0 to infinity. Right, and that converges uniformly in every compact interval. That's to a nice continuous thing. Okay, and if I just write that out, so that's going to be 1 plus t plus t squared over 2, et cetera. But now if I divide that by t, what do I get? Okay, well, I can divide each one and then take the limit. So I'm going to get this 1 over t. That's the only bad term. And then the rest are going to be, again, a nice power series. So in other words, this is just 1 over t plus this power series, n equals 0 to infinity, t to the n number, and now it becomes n plus 1 factor because things got shifted by 1. Right? Okay, and actually, what's the radius of convergence? Just get some practice again for this power series.
It's infinity, right?
Correct. Yep. Just like it was up above. That's right. Okay, so we have that the function that we're interested in, this e to the t over t, is exactly equal to a 1 over t plus some nice continuous function, okay? And so that's another way to guess that that was the right thing to subtract off. It came from the leading order term here in our power series expansion, okay? Continuous. That's another way to see that difference. Okay, but in any case, now we're going to try to use it over here to get this second part here, this principal value part. So this part over here. So let's try that. So now compute the second part. Okay, so we have. I'll just write it out again. This limit as a epsilon goes to 0 from the right of integral minus 1 to minus epsilon e to the t over t dt, not changing anything, plus integral from epsilon to 1 of e to the t over t dt. Okay, but now what I want to do is subtract off 0, okay? So I'm just going to subtract 0 from that, and the way that I'm going to write 0 is the one coming from this principal value of a 1 over t. So I'm going to subtract and add the integral from epsilon to, from minus 1 to epsilon and epsilon to 1. So let me just write it out and see if that makes sense. So this will be 0, the integral from minus 1 to minus epsilon of 1 over t dt plus the integral from epsilon to 1 of 1 over t dt. So this is exactly the 0 that we saw last time. Because the two sides cancel. Okay, so that means that to compute this principal part, now we can pull everything in, use the linearity of integrals, and end up with limit as epsilon goes to 0 from the right, integral from minus 1 to minus epsilon of e to the t minus 1 over t dt plus the integral from epsilon to 1 of e to the t minus 1 over t dt. Okay, but now what have I got? I've got now this perfectly good continuous function. Where did it go? This one here, f tilde, and so that's what this is, right? This is my f tilde, and that's a perfectly good continuous function. So I have this continuous function, and I integrate it from minus 1 to minus epsilon, and then from epsilon to 1, and take the limit, and I'm just going to get the whole integral from minus 1 to 1. Okay, so that's, let me write that down. So then this is then equal to the integral from minus 1 to 1 of that continuous function. Let me write it as f tilde of t dt. And that's the same f tilde that I have written right over here, right? So it's just this e to the t minus 1 over t, except at 0, where I plug it in at 1, just so that it's well defined there, and continues. Okay. Any question about that? That's the trick, okay? So That makes sense. Yeah, so we subtracted off this thing that was actually pretty bad. It was this divergent pair of divergent integrals, but they canceled. Okay, so we got to subtract out zero. Okay, and so then, but this is a continuous function and therefore differentiable, I mean, integrable, and so it's some number, so, which exists since. F sub is continuous. And hence integrable. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so if not, then I want to move on from the principal value and these improper integrals and return to something we did a long time ago, but now we have another viewpoint on it, and that is going to be the same thing we just did right here. These are Taylor series. Okay, so we just used Taylor series a second ago, and I want to return to those because we have another way of understanding the error term in those in terms of integrals. Okay, and sometimes one is better, sometimes the other is better. So I just want to recall what we had, because it was a while ago, and then get something new. All right, so so back to Taylor polynomials. Again. Okay, so let me just recall the setup. So recall from chapter 8, if we have a function f, and let's see, it's continuous on some interval AB. We have some point inside of AB that we're going to use for our expansion about. So C is between A and B. And then we have to have a condition that we can take a lot of derivatives. And that's the hard part, but many functions do. So F has n plus one derivatives. Okay, so that's just something that it has them. So there's some, that gives us some function on AB. If I take n plus one derivatives, it's got, it's at least that differentiable. Okay, then we write, so we had the Taylor polynomial. So P sub n of x is our attempt to approximate our function with a polynomial of degree n. So this is the sum, n equals zero, r equals zero to n. And then we use the rth derivative evaluated at this point we're expanding about, this c, divide by n r factorial, and then multiply that by x minus c to the r. So that's our polynomial. It's degree n, and it's the approximation. Okay, great. But then it's not right, of course. There's some error, and the error is what we want to get our control on. And so, and that's this r. So r sub nx will be the function that we wanted, so f minus this attempt here, this approximation, pn of x. So it's the difference between the function we want and this approximation, okay? So for example, if we're in that example over there, e to the t is equal to my f of t, and c is equal to zero, then this r sub n of t is gonna be e to the t, and then we just subtract one and t and t squared over two, et cetera, and we just keep going until we get to the nth term, t to the n over n factorial. So if annotation is clear, any questions about that notation? So it's just a name for a difference between the function and our polynomial that tries to approximate. This is what we did before. All right. And so let me note the theorem that we had previously and then a new theorem. So old, we have the theorem, this is what, 8.46. And this is the Lagrange error term. And that says that for every x, there exists zeta. Okay, and the tricky part is we don't know much about that zeta, except it's there, except that it's between C and X. And that gives us the error. So the error R sub N of X is equal to something that looks a lot like the next term ought to be. So F, and we take the next derivative, so N plus 1. And then divide that by n plus 1 factorial, just like we would for the next term, and multiply that by x minus c to the n plus 1, just like we would for the next term. And then the only thing I left out is where we evaluate this f, and that's where this funny zeta comes in. Okay, is that that's where we evaluate our function, the n plus first derivative of f. Okay, so that was the error term that we had before. And now we're going to get a new one. So new, and this is theorem 12.1248. This is the integral error bound. And it's gives us, it's in many ways better. It's the formula that R sub n of x is equal to. Unfortunately, we do have to, oh, sorry, I have to add one more thing, which I will add afterward, but it's going to be an integral. And let's see, we have 1 over, instead of n plus 1, we just have n factorial. So we're off by a factor of n plus 1 there. Otherwise, it's quite similar. And so that, but now we have an integral, it goes from c to x. And we're going to take this n plus first derivative again, just like we did before. At t, and then we're going to integrate that against x minus t to the n d t. Okay. And let's see, so the things that changed, this is just an n, and this is an n plus 1. This is just an n, this is an n plus 1. And of course, we have an integral here, and here we just evaluated at a single point. So those are the differences between those two. And actually, I do have to add one more hypothesis. And it's because we're doing this integral, so this function has to be integrable. So that's the only extra condition. If also this f, n plus first derivative, is not just some function, right, but also Riemann integrable. Now remember, most functions are Riemann integrable, so that's a relatively minor restriction. But it is a restriction. We can find functions that are not. Okay, so that's our formula. Let me just run through this example of the exponential function for both of those, just so that it's clear how it works, and then we can try to prove it. So example. So I want to find the two terms, the two versions of this error function. For e to the x at a particular point. So look at, so consider both formulae for this Rn, and let me just do it at a particular point, at x equals 10, just so I have a number to plug in there. If so, my function f of x will just be e to the x, just like we did above. It's our favorite power series. It's easy to work with. Its derivatives are very easy. And of course, the easiest place to work is around c equals 0. So let's do that. So around c equals 0. Mm-hmm. OK, so so first let's do this Lagrange version. All right, so for that one, let's see, so it says over here that our error is supposed to be given by this formula. All right, so let's just try it. So then R sub n of 10, maybe I'll just draw a little picture of what we're doing here. So we have we're expanding about zero, c equals zero here. And we have the exponential function. It looks like this. And there's 10. And then we have some polynomial function that tries to copy our thing, but it turns into a polynomial, okay, eventually. And so this will be p of n. The red one is going to be e to the x. Okay. And so what we're looking for is this difference here. This is r sub n of 10. Okay, that's that difference between the two values, the function itself, and this approximation. Okay, so that's what we're trying to do. So let's do it. And so the formula for the Lagrange error over here, right here. Okay, so we just plug it all in. So this is then equal to, let's see, so the nice thing about this is that its derivative is itself. So this is just going to be e to the zeta. And then we have n plus 1 factorial in the denominator. And then we have x, let's see, c is just 0. So this is just an x here. So we're just left with x. And x is 10, because we're plugging in 10. So this is 10 to the n plus 1. Okay, so that is the estimate that we have for that error. And if we just kind of eyeball it, actually, can anyone see, just looking at this quickly, where we expect this to be started to work pretty well, about how big n should be, where this starts to be small. So we have these tens here, and we have these n's in the denominator. So what you want is for the n's to cancel off with those tens. Okay, so it's going to start to happen when n is maybe about 20, because then you will cancel off the first one. So then you'll have a bunch of tens on the top, and you'll have a 1, 2, 3, to 20, and they'll sort of cancel about right. Okay, so it's somewhere around there. Okay, so but in any case, we can certainly bound it. The biggest that zeta can be, because it's got to be between 0 and 10, is 10. So this is less than or equal to e to the 10 to the n plus 1 divided by n plus 1 factorial. Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions about the Lagrange one? This is the one that we did previously. All right, and so then the new one is this integral error. All right, so let's try that one. So integral. All right, so that says that this Rn at 10 is equal to, all right, so we just copy this down over here, and it's 1 over n factorial. And it's going to be the integral. And again, this nth derivative does nothing to our functions. It's the exponential function. So this is the integral. C is 0 up to 10. So 0 to 10 of the nth derivative. So that's just e to the just e to the t, right? And then we have x minus t. X is 10. So that's a 10 minus t to the n. Okay, any questions about that? So that's just copying this formula over here and plugging in the value of x equals 10 and c equals 0. Okay, and so now we can try to estimate this and see how our estimate compares to what we got with the previous one, with this error. Okay. And they're pretty similar, actually. So, so this is a... So Rn of 10 is less than or equal to, okay, well, let's see. So one easy thing we could do is we can try to just replace this with a constant, okay, and see what we can get. So we just stick in the biggest constant here. Then we'll have 1 over n factorial integral from 0 to 10, and we'll take e to the 10th. So the biggest thing it could possibly be, and then 10 minus g to the n dt, and then that's an integral we know how to do, right? And so then this is equal to 1 over n factorial, and let me pull out the e to the 10th, so e to the 10th in the numerator. And let me do a substitution, so this will be the integral from 0 to 10 of s to the n ds. Okay. So this is s equals 10 minus t. Okay, there are a couple signs to get correct, but that I believe is right. Okay, and then that's an integral we can do. So then this is just equal to e to the 10th over n factorial, and then we have 10 to the n plus 1 over n plus 1. So that's the same bound that we had before. Okay, so we can get the same bound out of this, so at least it's not worse. And let me do one more example. So the other thing I can do, there are other bounds you can get from this, though, because it's actually better. So I was trying to do this integral here. All right, and one thing I could do is I could replace this with a constant, the biggest thing I could get, and then I could do this integral. The other thing I could do is I could replace this with the biggest thing I could get, and then this is also an integral I know how to do. Okay, so I could do both of those. So let me do that second thing. So what's the biggest value that this term achieves on this interval? So between 0 and 10.
10 to the n. 10 to the nth.
Exactly right. So I'm just going to pull out that 10 to the n, and then I'm going to have an exponential interval to do. So let me do that. So this is less than or equal to. Again, I'm going to leave the 1 over n factorial alone, and it's integral from 0 to 10, e to the 10 t, but then as you said, I'm going to replace that next term with the maximum value it achieves, so that's a 10 to the n dt, like so. Mm-hmm. And of course, the t, this is an integral I can do, the 10 to the n is now a constant, so I get the 10 to the n over n factorial. And then when I do this integral, of course, it's an easy integral because it's exponential now. And so that's just e to the t. And so that I get e to the 10 minus e to the 0. So I have e to the 10th minus e to the 0, which is just 1. Okay, so let me just get rid of that 1. Why not? Small. So e to the 10 to the n over n factorial. Okay, so this is, it's similar, but it's actually a bit different. Okay, and so you can get sometimes one is better and sometimes the other is better. So this is, let's see, how does it differ from the one above? So above we had, is this n plus 1 factorial and 10 to the n plus 1. So it is, it differs by a factor of n plus 1 over 10. It depends on whether n is bigger or smaller than 10. So for small n's, this is a big improvement over our estimate, and for us bigger n, the other one is better. Okay, so it's just different estimates. But in any case, it's not quite the same. Okay, any questions about those two estimates before we prove them? Okay, sorry, so I guess we already proved one of them. So the one that's left to prove is this new one here. So let me prove this second theorem. So 10.48. Okay, so the structure is as follows. So use induction on n, the degree of the polynomial that you're using. And for the base case, n equals 0, use fundamental thermal calculus 12.1. And for the induction step, we want to use integration by parts. Which I think was 12.10. And in both cases, we had some restriction on whether things were integrable. And so let me just recall what those explicit restrictions were and make sure that we have them here and use that to complete the proof. So recall the fundamental theorem of calculus 12.1. So the hypotheses we had were that we had a continuous function. In some interval, and that's one of the hypotheses. I guess let me put my hypotheses back here. Right, so that's one of the hypotheses we have here. It's continuous, and the integral not only exists, but down here we want that the integral is itself. I'm sorry, the derivative not only exists, but the derivative is integrable. So that's our extra hypothesis, and that's what we needed for the fundamental theorem of calculus also. So the derivative is Riemann integrable on AB. Okay, so those were our hypotheses. Then we get the fundamental theorem of calculus. So the integral from A to B of F prime of T dt was just F evaluated from B to A. Okay, and so let's just use that now to prove the first step here. Right, so base case. All right, so to do that, let's see, what do we have over here? We're trying to do n equals zero. So we have to have, so we have to figure out what R0 is. All right, so let's start with what R0 is. And the key is to try to remember what it means. And here we have what R is, right? It's the difference between our function and the polynomial approximation. And so the key then is to remember what is the polynomial approximation of degree zero. So just copying the definition over there, f of x minus p0 of x. But what is p0 of x? Clear. So we can either go to our formula here, or we can just try to think of the best constant, so degree zero approximation to our function is. Sort it through.
Shouldn't it just be f of c or f of x?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Yep. F of c. It's the evaluation. And so we have our function here, and we're trying to approximate it here at c. And the first thing we get is just a constant. And then the next we get a line. And then the next we get a quadratic. But they're all based at that point c. And so f of c is what you get. And also, if you run through this formula, at r equals zero, this becomes just one. And this whole thing becomes just one. And this becomes just f because it's the zero derivative. And so you just left with f of c and track it through. Okay. So if I write that down, so then this is just f of x minus f of c. Okay. And that's good because that's the output here of the fundamental theorem of calculus. All right. So this, in other words, is just f of t evaluated from c to x, just the definition. Right? Just plug in x and subtract plugging in c. And so then this is equal to the integral from c to x of f prime of t dt by the fundamental theorem of calculus. Okay. And that is equal to what we wanted. So if I just plug in everything just sort of pedantically to write down exactly this right-hand side over here, all right, I have all these other terms, but they're all just ones, right? So if I just plug everything in, I get, oops, sorry, this one down here. They're all just one. So this just becomes a 1 over a 0 factorial, which is just a 1. And then this is the same integral as I have up above. Good. And then this is just the first derivative. So f1 is just f prime. And this is the 0th power. So again, that's just 1. So that's exactly what I wanted, which is the right-hand side. So we're done. Okay, any questions about that? So that's just tracking through the notation and using the fundamental theorem of calculus. And again, we have to make sure that our hypotheses are hold, and they do, because here we needed, this was integrable, and over here we made the assumption that it was integrable. Okay, finally, the induction step. All right, and so let's see, the claim is that we're going to use parts. So let me just recall the parts. So, and once again, the key is that we need the same hypotheses. So if we have two functions, u and v, and they are continuous in this interval from c to x, well, we'll call it a, b. Then we get, and of course, the same hypothesis as above. What's the whole point here? And their derivatives are V minus double, right? So that's the extra hypothesis. So U prime and V prime are V minus double. Then you can write down the usual integration by parts. Let me just figure it out. So the integral of U of t, v prime of t, dt from a to b is just the same as a minus integral from of u prime v plus the evaluation of the product uv. Right, so just the usual integration by parts. Okay, and again, the key is that our functions have this property here, so we can use it. All right, so then finally, let's try the induction step making use of that theorem. So for induction, of course, we're going to assume they are n case and try to prove the n plus one. So we will assume the equation holds for n and show equation holds for n plus 1, right? That's our goal, right? So, so we're going to assume this formula right here. So exactly what's written there. So that Rn of x is what it's supposed to be. So 1 on n factorial, integral from c to x, n plus first derivative at t, x minus t to the n dt. So that's our assumption. Okay, and now we want to do something about n plus 1 and compute. So the first thing is we need Rn plus 1 to be somehow related to Rn. Okay, so let's try to do that. So first, we can just write down the definition of Rn plus 1. So just like we noted over here, right, the definition of Rn is always just f minus the p. Okay, so we can just write that down. So this is just equal to f minus p, and this is pn plus 1 of x. Okay, now we want to involve pn, right? Because we want to get something that involves rn. So let's just write that with pn. So this is equal to f of x minus pn of x. And let's see, what is the difference between pn and pn plus 1? Well, scrolling off, I shouldn't do that. But pn, you just sum those terms. So it's just got one more term, right? So it's just the last term that we have here. And that's the only difference. So let me just add that in. So to get the n plus first polynomial term, all I do is take the degree n plus 1 part. And so that's going to be the f. N plus 1 evaluated at C, just like it's written up there, divided by N plus 1 factorial times X to the X minus C to the N plus 1. So it's the N plus 1 degree part of our polynomial. So any questions about that? So that's just the definition. That comes from our definition of P, N and PN plus one. You just sum and that's the last term there. It goes in there. It's not a notation, but it should hopefully come out of the definition. Okay, very good. So now we do have the Rn sitting here. So this is then equal to Rn of x minus this term here. Okay, great. And we're trying to make use of this integration by parts formula over here. All right. So, and what do we have over here? So we've got this integral here, right? And we have this term here, and we're trying to get, maybe I should write down the goal and see where we're going. So this is a equals question mark. Right, so this is supposed to be equal to 1 over n plus 1 factorial. Integral c to x, and take the n plus second derivative, and then x minus t to the n plus 1 dt, right? So that's what we're trying to achieve. And what we would like to see is that this integral here, and this integral here, and that one term there are the three terms that we get from the integration by parts. So to do that, what do we have? So we have an f the n plus 1 derivative and an f n plus 2 derivative. So this will be our u, okay? And well, if I look here, this will be the u and this will be the v, right? So those are the two terms that we're going to take. So right, so take u of t to be the n plus first derivative of f, and v of t to be x minus t to the n plus one. And let's just try it, okay? See if that works. Then we compute. Now we can just compute. So we have u prime is just f n plus 2. And v prime is just n plus 1 times x minus t to the n. And actually, that's not quite right, but I messed up my sign. So there's a times a minus 1. By the chain rule, right? Okay, very good. And so let me kind of plug this in. So let's forget what we want. We have that 1 over n factorial let's see, so this is going to just summarize where all the pieces are. So this is going to be this u prime is here. Maybe I'll just write that out in red here. So we have that this is u prime, and this here is v, right? And so then up here I have u, and this is almost v prime, right? Except I'm off by n plus 1. So this is minus v prime over n plus 1. Exactly right. And then down here I have right here I have u, and right here I have my v. So then it all works out. So we get just how much I need to write out now, but that um, Okay, well, I guess I'll just divide it all by n plus 1 factorial. So we have 1 over n plus 1 factorial. Times this integral from c to the c to x of u prime of t v of t dt is equal to what we wanted. So this is going to be minus 1 over n factorial times the integral from c to x of u of t v prime of t. And times 1 over n plus 1, right, to make this n plus 1 factorial and this n plus 1 factorial line up. And then plus 1 over n plus 1 factorial times u of t. V of t evaluated from 0 to from c to x. And okay, I don't know, a lot of tracking through the notation there, but I hope it was clear how that worked. I will stop the recording and stick around in case there are questions.